you for that. We are back in the book of Daniel this week. We started last week answering a question, and we're going to look at that again. We looked at a question that Nebuchadnezzar asked in reference to the chapter here, and we'll get to that in a minute. We mentioned last week how that there are people throughout the Bible and throughout history who have challenged God, and it never, ever works out well for them. I think of Pharaoh when Moses would come to him and he was trying to get Pharaoh to let the people go, and Pharaoh would challenge him. In Exodus chapter 5 and verse 2, Pharaoh said this to Moses: "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice?" That's a really bad question, okay? You don't want that answer. You'll get the answer, but you won't want it. That didn't end well for him. As the Israelites were getting ready before God killed the firstborn, the people came to Pharaoh and told him this in Exodus chapter 10. Pharaoh's servant said unto him, "How long," speaking of Moses, "shall this man be a spare unto us? Let the men go that they may serve their God. Knowest thou not yet that Egypt is destroyed?" Because he fought against God, he ended up having all the different plagues really destroyed there. Throughout history, who knows, the Beatles are very popular, not to me, by the way. John Lennon of the Beatles said many years ago in an interview with an American magazine, he said, "Christianity will end. It will disappear. I do not have to argue about that. I am certain." How'd that end up for him? Got assassinated by some lunatic several years later. Point is, we don't challenge God. Now, many of us would not challenge God to that extent, but there are those who do challenge God, and because they do, they challenge his people, and that's what we saw in the book of Daniel here, chapter 3. Well, really, the whole book. It's believers, good Jews, particularly Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who were doing the right thing. They were trying to serve God, and they get thrown into this pagan country. And they face all these different things. And they have this leader who is challenging them at every step. And in this chapter, Nebuchadnezzar challenged them, and it didn't turn out well for him. And we were looking at the story here where he built his own idol. God had given him in chapter number 2, God had told him about the coming world powers. By the way, that has to do with prophecy, and that has all been fulfilled to the T. There's one more ruling power that's coming during the end time, during the tribulation. But he didn't like that, so he built a statue out of one material, signifying in his mind that his kingdom was going to go forever. And then he said, and then he would make the people bow down. Every time they played that music, all those different instruments that Brother Bichardo read, they were supposed to fall down and worship the idol. And of course, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego didn't do it. They were turned in. King Nebuchadnezzar, very cruel. I was reading about his cruelty this week and his stuff you couldn't even mention in public. He was a very cruel ruler. And he brought them in and gave them one more chance. But he doubled down. If you don't do it, things are going to be worse. And they did. They said, "We're not going to bow down." And of course, we know the story. It was worse. But the question we're trying to answer for him is in Daniel chapter 3 and verse 15. He said, "But if he be ready, at that time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, all these different things. Ye fall down and worship the image which I have made." Well, he goes, I'm giving you a pass. You get another shot. And if you hear the music and you bow down, everything's fine. We'll let it slide. "But if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning, fiery furnace." And here's the statement we're rebuking last week and this week. "But who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands?" Now that's a rhetorical question. He didn't believe there was a God who could. But for us, to me, I'm going to take it as a legitimate question. Who is that God? Well, Nebuchadnezzar, you're going to find out. Nebuchadnezzar had a huge problem with God. And I mentioned last week, so does our society in general. Our school systems have a problem with God. Where you work probably has a problem with God. They try to force Christians to do things against their belief system, and if you don't do what they say, you can be fired. Big tech companies, they'll censor you. Our entertainment spits in the face of God all the time. And businesses do as well, okay? But there is a God. Who is that God? Well, I'm giving you the answer. We started last week. We said, first of all, here's who that God is. He is the God of great people. You see, the greatness of God should be reflected in the lives of those who believe in him. We should be that shining example of God to our society. We should reflect God to our society. We looked last week, as we started, we looked at two things. The kind of people that bring this kind of greatness of God to the minds of those who know them are those who are people of conviction. We looked at that in Daniel chapter 1. Daniel and them already decided long before that they were questioned what they believed, and that if their beliefs were ever challenged, they would stand up. And that's exactly what they did. We also saw that they were people of comparison. Because they stood up in Daniel chapter 1, when they eventually came before King Nebuchadnezzar, he noticed the difference. And he said, in all matters of wisdom and all the different, they were 10 times better. His words. So God's people, they have lives that in comparison, and we're not comparing ourselves to the unsaved, because except for the grace of God, that would be us. But it is nice to know if we do live for God and we try to do the right thing, that it is just better for us. And by the way, don't ever think that living for God, you lose out. That's the lie of this world, and it's the lie that young people fall for all the time. If I serve God, I'm missing out on life. No, you're missing out on misery. You're missing out on a bunch of junk, and you're missing out on the blessing of God. Okay? You may not see it now because everybody you look at on your social media and everybody you see around you, they're going to give the view that, oh, man, they're just living the life. Nope, that's just a photo op. That's just an event. That's just a one-time thing. But as life goes on and life starts hitting them in the face, they're going to see that it would have been better had they lived for God. Now, let's look at a new one. The greatness of God is seen in the greatness of God's people. They were also people of commendation. Look at Daniel chapter number 2. Daniel chapter number 2. This is where the King Nebuchadnezzar initially had a dream. And he wakes up and the dream's troubling him. There's just one problem with it. He did not remember what the dream was about. And he wanted an interpretation to the dream. So he got all the wise men together and said, here's how it's going to work. You're going to give me the interpretation of the dream, and I don't even know what the dream is. You're going to tell me what the dream is. And the wise men are like, you've got to be kidding me. There is no king that would ask that. And he goes, you guys are just trying to stall, enough of you, kill them all. Now Daniel, who was one of the wise men, was not invited to the party. And they come to him and they're like, hey, the king's coming and he's going to kill all you guys. And Daniel's like, whoa, time out. Let's not be hasty about this. Go to the king. Tell him to give me a little bit of time, and I'll get his answers for him. And then, of course, when they leave, Daniel and his buddies have a prayer meeting. I guess you would too, right? And God gives him the answer. So now he comes back before Nebuchadnezzar with the answer. Daniel chapter 2 and verse 27. Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king hath demanded, cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, and the soothsayers show unto the king? I like the way Daniel just kind of throws them under the bus, right? It's kind of like, by the way, your guys couldn't show you this. But he didn't take credit. Look at the next verse. What are the next six words or seven? Ready? But there is a God in heaven. Seven. There's a God in heaven. Daniel wasn't doing this to prop himself up. Daniel wasn't doing this to make himself better than everybody else. By the way, the king already noticed he was better in character and everything, and we'll see that in a minute. He used this as an opportunity to say, you're wise men, and by the way, they worshiped a false pagan god, couldn't show you what was going on, but there is a God in heaven. Not your guy's God, the real God. And so what happens here, Daniel got the dream. He told Nebuchadnezzar, he told him the answer. He told him what the dream was about. He told him the interpretation, which is not for us for today. That'd be more prophecy. We're not getting into that right now. But here's the point. Daniel made it very clear to the king that this was not just something he pulled out of his hat. Daniel made it very clear to him that the answer didn't come because of who Daniel was. Daniel made sure that the king got the memo that it was from God, that God was real. It wasn't just something thrown out. God did this. He wanted Daniel to know who God is. He made it very clear that the reason he got the answer, there is a God in heaven, a very specific God, and really there's only one God. Now that's what our lives should do. That's what our lives should be. In some way, our lives are supposed to show to this world that there is a God in heaven. By the way, if someone ever comes up to you and says, man, what's different in your life? And by the way, if you live right, some people will notice it. And you don't just say, well, you know, yeah, I've been lucky or this or that. So I'll tell you what the difference in my life is. It has nothing to do with me. It's all about God in heaven. God in heaven. And by the way, if you don't want to be like that, you're going to have the carpet ripped out from under you one day. God's going to say, fine, it's all about you. Let's see how that works. It's about God in heaven. Do you not understand that we are to be the symbol of God in this world? We give God the glory for everything that happens. Do you know we're not supposed to lift up Christianity? We're supposed to lift up Jesus Christ. And he said if we lift him up, he'll draw all men unto him. We're not to glorify Christians. We are to glorify God. We're to glorify God. See, the God of heaven is reflected in the lives of his children on this earth. Let me give you a couple thoughts. First, we are ambassadors. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, 20 says, now then, we are ambassadors for Christ. What's an ambassador? Somebody that lives in a country that's not theirs, who represents their government or their leader from their true country. If you were an ambassador for the United States in another country, you would be representing all that the United States stood for, which right now it doesn't stand for much, but you would represent our country in that country. And the country you live with, that you're living in to represent, is not your country. And by the way, this world is not our world. This world is not our home. This world is not what we're supposed to represent. Our home is heaven, and we are ambassadors for King Jesus Christ. And we are supposed to live in such a way that we bring honor to him, and we are his ambassador. What do we say about our king? I hope our lives say that he is great. The Bible tells us in Matthew chapter 5, we are a light. What does a light do? A light shines bright in the darkness. And this world is a very dark place. And I'm telling you, and I'm not getting on you, I'm preaching to the choir here, but one of the reasons our country isn't a mess is because Christians are no longer light. We're just as dark as the world. And we don't shed any light on anything. We do the same things they do. There's nothing different in our life. They can't look to us and see the glory of the Lord. We're supposed to be light in this world. Why? For our sake? No, for his sake. The Bible tells us we're to be salt. In the same chapter, Matthew chapter 5, you're the salt of the earth. What does salt do? Back then, salt, they didn't have refrigerators. Salt was a preservative. It would help if Christians would live right. Maybe this country will last a little bit longer than the time frame is telling us it's going to live. It's going to go. It's getting dark. We want to preserve it as long as possible so we can reach as many people with the gospel. And also we are witnesses. We know that in Acts chapter 1 and verse 8. What does a witness do? A witness testifies of what they have seen and experienced. And we're to be a witness of what Jesus Christ has done in our life. We are not our own. We belong to him. We know that in 1 Corinthians. You were bought with a price. And if he has bought us and we are not our own, then we are supposed to live for him. So what happened because they did live that way? We're going to get to Daniel chapter 3 in a minute, but if you look at Daniel chapter 3, verse 28, eventually, because of the way they lived, Nebuchadnezzar got the message. Verse 28 of chapter 3, then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who hath sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word. He said, man, they're changing the way I thought. And yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. Then he backs it up as a king, only a king could. Therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, and language which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their house shall be made a dunghill. What's a dunghill? Ask your parents. Because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. I have a feeling that they reflected God fairly well. I have a feeling that they showed God was real to that pagan king. And chapter 4 was written by Nebuchadnezzar. Many believe that he came to know the Lord. But what are we reflecting of God? Are we giving him the glory for everything? I get tired of people who say one thing and do another. Tired. I remember, and I could give you multiple illustrations. This one just came to my mind. Right before that time when I gave myself over to start serving the Lord, and it was kind of going through my thought processes, and I was kind of fighting it. But I remember I was watching a baseball game, a World Series game, and it was the Philadelphia Phillies. It was probably 1980, something in that range. And there was a player on the team, and you know they interviewed the players, and before the game they were talking to him. I think it was Mike Schmidt, if I'm not mistaken, and he openly spoke about his faith. You know, I'm a believer, I believe in Jesus, blah, blah, blah. He mentioned that. And I remember they won that game, and that game was the deciding game. They won the World Series, and they were in there in the locker room celebrating. And like they all do. They got the microphone up to him. He started swearing, started cussing. He was drinking just like everybody else on the team. And even as someone who wasn't serving the Lord back then, I'm like, that just confused me. This was the same guy that just talked about how he loved the Lord. And here he is because they won a stupid baseball game acting like a pagan. Because the fact of the matter is, when the rubber hits the road, Christians don't really care very much about backing up their life with what they said. Now, you would think, like I mentioned this morning, like wherever I worked, I always let people know I was a Christian because it kind of kept me in check, right? You know, I just like, I don't want to embarrass them. I got to kind of live right. You would think if you throw it out there that you'd want to back it up, but we're so comfortable with not backing it up. And by the way, you don't get a black eye when that happens. God gets a black eye. And I'm just saying, why don't we lift him up? If we really feel that he is the greatest, that serving God's the greatest thing we can do, let's live in such a way that people can see that. Fourthly, or underneath this, they're also a people of challenge, a kind of people that show how the greatness of God are people of challenge. Turn back, stay in Daniel chapter 3. Now, I like these guys. I like Daniel too. I like these guys here. So here they are, they're brought in. They had the guts not to stand up, not to worship. They're like, I ain't worshiping this pagan, you know, idol here and all this nonsense. I ain't doing that. And so they're brought in before King Nebuchadnezzar. Look at verse 16. I believe, chapter 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered. The king, you know, the king's threatening them, right? Who is that God? Okay, well, they're gonna share a thought. They get to talk. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, you ready? We're not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the fiery furnace. And he will deliver us out of thy hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. They did not go in there with a strategy to appease the king. Now, they also didn't go there with a strategy to irritate him. They were just straight up. They were willing to put their faith on the line and put it to the test. And here's the key. Even if they didn't get the results they wanted. Here's the key words there. But if not, He said, I'm throwing you in the fiery furnace. They're like, look, our God can deliver us if he wants to. But if not, we're just letting you know right now, we're not bowing down. But if not. See, how many of us put God to the test every time, every day? I'll serve God as long as everything goes well, and as soon as something doesn't go well, we bail out. What about, but if not? Yes, God is able to fix this situation in my life, but if not, I'm still going to serve him. They stood up to him. I like the way they answered him. By the way, this wasn't even a test of their own choosing. They didn't give some type of polished political answer. They said, we're not careful to answer thee in this matter. What they were saying is, look, we're not just telling you something to keep us out of the fire and to make you feel good. We can't do that. We're no polished. They weren't politicians. But they did give a pointed answer. Our God whom we serve is able to deliver us. They couldn't just sit still and have him say, who is that God? They're like, our God. He can deliver us. He can do that. And he will deliver us out of thy hand. They live by the promise. They're like, even if we burn in the fire, at least we're out of your hand. You're not going to bother us anymore. You know, someone, John R. Rice, he was a great evangelist for many years ago, and he was preaching a meeting, and they didn't like the way he was preaching it, and someone sent him a letter and said, I'm going to kill you. And he read it in the service and said, you can't threaten me with heaven. Okay? There was a promise. And then they did give a principled answer there. They said, we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. So we're not going to do it. I don't care how you threaten us, or whether you could threaten us, or the flip side of a threat is what? Reward. Compromise and you're rewarded. They're like, no, we're not doing that. By the way, it'd be nice if Christians had some principles. It would be nice if we would stick with what we say. Here's the problem with Christianity, and we need to understand this. We need to quit backpedaling on our beliefs in the hopes that we'll reach more people. It doesn't work that way. Because first of all, you don't have that choice. Show me in the Bible where it says compromise what you believe to reach somebody. Change what you do in the church to make it more like what's happening out in the world so people will feel more comfortable in the church. Show it to me in the Bible. It's not in there. Now, doing the things we can, like being kind to people and loving people and all those different things, there's nothing wrong with it. But I'm not going to compromise. We're not going to put a bunch of immodestly dressed ladies up here singing with a bunch of guys and some praise team that thinks that they're going to win, you know, American Idol, church version. We're not doing it. We're not here to focus on a singing group. Okay? I just love you, Lord. No, we're not doing that stuff. We're going to sing together songs that have meaning. Not like I saw a rock and I thought about Jesus. We're not singing that stuff. I want something that has a little bit of substance. I want something that has a little bit of God in it. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Not a little bit. A lot of God in it. Okay? I don't want that stuff. Because we think, well, they'll come in. If we change the music and we change some of the things, people will feel, and they're not going to change their lives. They're going to come in on the low end. No, we're just going to do what God told us to do. By the way, if we love them and we care about them, it's not a big deal. You know, I just believe a lot of people expect when they come to church for church to be like church. Right? But we don't have that option. And second reason we're not going to do that, it just doesn't work. Why would someone accept a faith that we don't even have a belief in? Enough of a belief to stand up. People don't like compromised faith. And by the way, you ever stand up to a bully when you were a kid in school? They're usually little wimpy. Remember, a guy came up to me one time and I hadn't seen him in a while. We're walking down the street. He goes, hey, man, I heard you said something about me. He was just trying to be a punk to see if I backpedal. I said, nope, I didn't say a thing. And I just stood there. He's like, oh, I was just kidding. He just seen if I'd backpedal. I ain't backpedaling. And that's what we do. You know, oh, I don't want to offend anybody. I'll backpedal. You know what they do? They push one time. And someone goes back, and they push again, and they keep pushing you back. Once you stop standing here and you start standing here, they want you to stand back there. We're not going to do that. We're not helping anybody. You know why people compromise their faith? They don't want to stay, they don't want to be thrown in the fire. And I'll just be honest with you, I wouldn't want to be thrown in the fire either. But we wouldn't have a choice now, would we? You ever see these guys, these compromising pastors, and it's a black eye? They'll get on television, they'll be interviewed. The Hillsong guys used to do it. Joel Osteen has done it. And they get on there, and, you know, they want to be a hip, cool pastor that loves the world. And they go on this show thinking they're going to be interviewed. They're always going to ask them a tough question, John. What do you think about abortion? That idiot from Hillsong, who eventually found out he was immoral too, well, you know, I'm not going to make a judgment. I want to hear their story. What kind of nonsense is that? If the story is, can I get help? Yeah. But there's no story you need to hear to say that abortion's murder, not murder. It's murder every single time. That didn't go very well. But when you try to compromise, it doesn't work. Now, let's get this done. Next, we ought to also be people of compassion. Compassion. Look at chapter 4. Let me tell you the story here. People of compassion. So Nebuchadnezzar has another dream. Now, in this dream, God is trying to deal with him because he has pride. By the way, you know, when you're kind of the world ruler, dictator, it's kind of easy to have pride. And Nebuchadnezzar did a lot of those type things. But because of the witness, I believe, of Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, his heart started turning towards God, but he was still proud. So the dream, I won't go into the dream, but the dream was basically that because of his pride, God was going to take the kingdom away from him for 7 years, and he was going to lose his mind and live like an animal. And then at the end of 7 years, he was going to come back to his mind, and God was going to restore him as king. And God's whole thing in showing this was to get rid of his pride, to show him that, hey, you may be the king, but I'm the one who really rules, and I want you to understand that. So Daniel's telling him the dream. Daniel chapter 4, verse 24. He goes, this is the interpretation, O king, and this is a decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beast of the field. And they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen. He was going to lose his mind for those 7 years. And they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and 7 times shall pass over thee, the 7 years, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee. After that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule. He says, after these 7 years, you're going to get your mind back, and I'm going to allow you to get your kingdom back. Now, that in and of itself is a bit of a miracle, right? You would have think power struggle, take it over the whole nine yards. But here's what I like in verse 27. Daniel now throws in his 2 cents worth. Ready? Wherefore, O king, let my counsel be acceptable unto thee, and break off thy sins by righteousness, and thine iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, if it may be a lengthening of thy tranquility. Do you understand here? History tells us Nebuchadnezzar was not a nice guy. Now, I think he got saved and he changed a little bit here, but he was not a nice guy. He had ripped Daniel and his fellows from their homeland. He had destroyed the walls. The temple was desolate, all that. This would have been Daniel's chance to say he's getting his, right? But look what Daniel says. Daniel says, look, this is what God said. Let me just give you some advice. You know, maybe if you change the way you live, maybe things will change here. It could be a lengthening of your tranquility. Maybe you won't be going crazy as soon as we think. Maybe things would go better for you. That's called compassion. That's called telling the truth, but yet saying, now, it doesn't have to be that way. Compassion. And let me just say this. There's one thing for those of us, our type of Christianity, who like to stand for the truth. Sometimes if we're not careful, we miss the compassionate part. We're really good with standing for the truth, and we're not good for loving people that maybe did not follow the truth. Do you understand? The two don't have to fight each other. Well, bless God, he just got what he deserved. How would you like to get what you really deserve? You know what we all deserve? Hell. Anything other than that's something we really don't deserve. So compassion. Sometimes, yeah, and by the way, the two don't fight it. Well, you know, if I stand for the truth, I'm not being compassionate. Look, if you don't stand for the truth, you're not being compassionate. What if Daniel just said, what's a dream mean? It's no big deal, King. It's just, you know, tree fell down and you know, it's just something about animals, okay, like a Disney special. No, he told him the truth. You're going to be crazy for 7 years. You're going to be living out like an animal. That's the truth. The compassion is, why don't we change so that doesn't happen? Why don't you change what you're doing so maybe, just maybe, that gets stretched out? Maybe to the point where you don't get it at all. Counsel. Let's balance our stand with caring. People, I think people do get the message. I've visited enough people that have visited our church to find out they do get the message. Let people get the message that we have beliefs that we're very strong on and we want to stand on the Bible. But also let them also get the message that these are people that really care. These are people that love others. These are people that want to reach into our community. Sometimes we like to say, well, you know, people don't like us because we stand for God. No, they don't like you because you're a knucklehead. You're rude. You're mean-spirited. Okay? By the way, there are times to be that way. But we do it all the time. I remember listening to David Gibbs. He's a Christian lawyer, CLA, and he goes to court when churches have issues. I heard him say that he has to tell pastor, look, don't go in there and be all like, well, bless God. DA, you better watch it, buddy, because God's going to get you. He says that doesn't help anything. We put them all on, we would put them on check against us because we were so mean spirited. It's like, you can be a Christian and still stand for what you believe and testify. Be compassionate. Next, they were people of continuance. People of continuance. You look in Daniel chapter number 5, that's the story of the handwriting on the wall. And I want you to notice, we won't go into all the verses, we're starting to run out of time here. But if you look at chapter 5 and verse 11, he sees the handwriting on the wall. By the way, this is a wicked king. He was desecrating the cups that they had taken from the temple, using it in a drunken party that they were having, and he wants to know what this dream is that he had, and the older queen says in verse 11, there is a man in thy kingdom, in whom is the spirit of the holy gods, and in the days of thy father light and understanding and wisdom. She goes through and says, hey, you need to go get this guy Daniel. He's been around for a long time. And she knew the stories about how he had helped in the past in Daniel chapter 2, the vision there, and Daniel chapter 4, the dream there. She goes, hey, go get that guy. But here's what I want you to understand. Daniel had been around for a really long time. I mean a long time. King after king after king. And then when the Babylonians went out and the Medo-Persian Empire came in, he's still there. All the way to Darius. And he stuck it out. And all those years in that pagan land, in all those years, Daniel stood just as firm and was just as godly as the first day he stepped into the land. He stuck it out. He continued in his faith. It wasn't just something as a young man he went through and then he stepped out later on and life hit him and he changed. No, no matter what he faced, no matter what happened, Daniel stuck with it year after year after year. And let me just say this, this world needs to see Christians who serve God for more than a week, for more than a year, for more than 5 years, for more than 10 years. Someone says, I've been serving God and been faithful to him for a really long time. You young people, when you get out of school, here's what happens. And Brother Goddard mentioned this on Friday. You go to Christian school and you have all these things you do. You were faithful to church. You worked on a bus route. You went soul winning. You did the things you're supposed to do. And then you get out of high school and now you're an adult and you got to make your decisions. No one is making you go. It's not the easy thing to do because you're here at school. You got to do them on your own. And you don't do them. And then it's the church's fault and it's the school's fault. It's your fault. Because you didn't do those things because they were the right thing to do. You just did them because everybody in the school did them. And then you start changing. And you want to blame us. Not our fault, it's your fault. If I change, it's not your fault, it's my fault. Well, you have to do those things because you're a pastor. I did those things long before I was a pastor. If there's a time when I'm never a pastor, I'll still be doing those things. And I didn't grow up in Christian school. I'm just saying, if we're going to serve God, it's not just a phase we go through when we're young. It's our life. There's no worse advertisement to the reality of God than a believer who steps away from their relationship with God. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 26, a tremendous verse. A righteous man falling down before the wicked. In other words, someone who was following God and now their life is a wreck. They did something wrong. Is as a troubled fountain and a corrupt spring. Taking something that's supposed to be pure and polluting it. You know why? If there's a fountain of water coming and the water's bad, that tells me the source is bad. By the way, the source isn't bad. The source is God. But we make the source look bad to those that don't know him. Let's be very careful. And then, lastly, people of character. People of character. Daniel chapter 6. This is the story of Daniel's in the lion's den. You know how that goes. Everybody's got, you know, Sunday school in your mind. You got that down. Three leaders. Of the three leaders that worked under the king, Daniel was the number one. The other two got jealous. So they're like, we need to knock him down a peg. So they're like, what can we do? So here's what they did. Verse 3. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. I mean, Daniel, of all the presidents and the prince, Daniel's like, he's the top dog. He's great. The king was got to even uplift him more. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom. They're like, let's see what Daniel's doing and see if we can, you know, skeleton in his closet. You know, like politicians, they want to find something that their opponent did that they can pull it up and make them look bad. What they do now, you know, they've been doing that for years. Concerning the kingdom. But look, but they could find none occasion nor fault. For as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault in them. Then these men switched gear. Verse 5, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Do you understand what they're saying? They're saying, let's see how he works. Let's find everything he's doing. And let's just see how that's working. And they looked and they're like, he does everything right. I mean, he never showed up late to work and changed his time card to make it look like he showed up on time. Yeah, everything he did was right. If Daniel said this is what he did, it's what he did. Could you imagine? They were looking. I wonder if somebody went through our life like that. What would they find? So they had to switch gears, right? They said, you know what? Here's how we're going to get him. We got to make some law that would violate what he lives as a Christian, so that he has to choose. Because they couldn't find anything the guy did wrong. Hey, if I asked your boss what they thought about you, what would they say? Would they say, that guy works an honest day's living, gives me an honest day's work. That guy shows up. And by the way, if you're a Christian, let's be faithful. By the way, I'll throw this in. Let's be faithful to our ministries too. Well, that's just volunteer work. Okay, whatever. But you show up late to work. You don't work hard when you're there. You're not honest. You have a horrible reputation as a Christian. I think if you're a Christian, you're just going to be better. Not to be better just because I'm working and I realize that whatsoever I do it heartily as unto the Lord. By the way, you know what might happen? You might get a raise. You know, bosses aren't dumb. I've been a boss before, not just here at church. I've been a boss before. And if you have a great worker, you want to keep him, he's getting more money. He's going to get taken care of. They're doing the job. But they could not find anything against him. What's your testimony at work? What's your testimony in the way you, I hate the metal here, pay your bills? Well, I love God. Then be honest. Well, I'm going through a tough time and I'm a little bit behind. Okay. Did you go tell your boss, hey, listen, I'm having a tough time, I'm a little bit behind, but but here's my payment plan to catch up. We just hide. What is it? We ghost them, you know? What kind of testimony do you have with your family? Man, I have unsaved family members, and that's very, very difficult, but you know, your testimony you live is going to go a long way towards whether or not they ever trust Christ. We had a girl one time, she was doing good. She had some issues, and she kind of turned a corner, was living for God, and then she kind of took another turn. Her mom wasn't saved. And one night her mom called, and she came by. It was like a Saturday night, 11 at night. She goes, she ran away. I was sitting there talking with her mom at our house. My wife was there, and she's talking to me. And as she's talking, the thought I had in my mind is that lady will probably never get saved because of her daughter's horrible testimony now. It's just sad. What about truthfulness? You don't bend the truth, okay? You either keep it or you break it. And then let me just mention this last one before we move on. We're going to be people of consistency. They made a rule that no one could pray except to the king. Now, I don't know how the king thought that was a really good idea. I just don't. The king liked Daniel. Well, they knew Daniel prayed 3 times a day. He would go to his house right where the window was open, and he would pray. Same time, you know, same bat station, all that stuff. And Daniel, knowing that he's going to get thrown in the lion's den, goes home and prays. Now, think about this for a minute. Nowhere does it say in the Bible you have to pray in front of your window where everybody's going to see you out loud. Daniel could have prayed in his heart. Daniel could have, you know, like, hey, I'll just, you know, before I lay down and go to bed. Amen. Why didn't Daniel do that? Because he did not want to back down. He knew they would be watching. He knew that they were watching him, and he's like, that's what I always do, and that's what I'm always going to do. If I'm going to be consistent when it's okay to do it, I'm going to be consistent when it's not okay to do it. Now, what's the point of what I'm saying here? I have no idea. Just kidding. Listen, we'll get to the last point next week. But God's greatness, I almost said unfortunately, but it doesn't have to be unfortunately. It's tied to his people. You don't have to be perfect. Let me just tell you that right now. People don't expect that. But we do reflect him. What is our life reflecting about God? Maybe there's some changes we need to make. And again, I'm not talking about this pious, you know, this outward fake stuff, hypocrite. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm talking about just genuinely wanting to serve God. Genuinely loving him. Genuinely just trying to do my best I can to serve God. People are watching. And it gives God honor and glory, and it shows his greatness when it makes a difference in our life. So what difference is it making in yours? Let's stand together this evening. Every head bowed and every eye closed, just for a minute, please. You know, if you read the book of Daniel, as we've looked through these men and what they did, there's one excuse we can't say. Well, you know, it's just tough today, Pastor. It is tough to live for God today. Tell it to those guys. Last time I checked, no one said that we can't pray to anybody but President Biden, or else we'll be thrown in a den of lions. Okay? I don't even know if I'd want to send them an email. No one has said that, you know, either you worship our false idol or you're going into fire. No one said that. These guys faced it. And they didn't have churches on every corner. What they had on every corner was pagan temples, pagan places of worship. They didn't have any backing. They had no youth director. They had no pastor. They had none of it. But they had God. So don't say it's hard. We still live in the easiest country in the world to live for God. And yet we don't. Why? Let's reflect God's greatness with our lives. Let us show the world that there is a God in heaven and it pays to serve him. Piano's going to play. If God spoke to you at all, why don't you come? Why don't you come?